This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the rest of the program today, we're talking about food allergies, specifically peanut allergies. The widespread existence and recognition of food allergies is a relatively recent phenomenon in the world. I found at least half a dozen stand-up comedians making jokes about food allergies, many along the lines of this bit from Jeff Applebaum.
Every time I go to my children's school, I am reminded of all the food allergies we never had when we were kids. I'm in their classroom last week, big sign on the wall, nut free zone. I look around. I don't think so.
All this kicked into high gear around the year 2000, when the American Academy of Pediatrics warned parents to carefully guard young children from exposure to peanuts, because some number of them would have severe reactions. But as our knowledge grew, that guidance changed. Now, parents are recommended to begin exposing children to peanuts as soon as 4 months old. But a study out of Northwestern found that fewer than 1 in 7 parents was aware of that change in recommendations. To learn more about this, we called Dr. Wahida Samady, lead author of the study and an associate professor of pediatrics at Northwestern Medicine. We originally had this conversation last year in July. Because we are on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you think by sending an email to talk@21stshow.org. When did the awareness of peanut allergies in children really start to rise?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We talk about food allergies as an epidemic, truly. But I would say in the last 2 decades, about 2 decades ago, maybe a little bit between, 20, 25 years ago, we noticed a sharp rise in the development of food allergies. Some of the work done by the Center for Food Allergy and Asthma and my colleagues, Dr. Gupta and Dr. Warren, who are on this paper as well with me, was looking specifically at that epidemiology. And they're finding what they found both in their first study and then also in the second was that food allergies had risen to about 7 to 8% of children having not just perceived food allergies, but actually like when you reviewed their symptoms, things that were very consistent with food allergic disorders or primary food allergies. And I should say there are multiple food related conditions, right? So celiac disease or gluten insensitivity and all these things are food related conditions. But what we're specifically talking about is those immediate, almost sometimes life-threatening reactions that happen. And we call those IgE mediated reactions. And those have risen sharply over the last 2 to 3 decades.
And they've actually risen. It's not just that our awareness of them has risen.
Yes, yes, they've actually risen. If you think about the symptoms of a food allergy, right? Like you have like immediate vomiting, immediate like hives all over, and then it can progress to trouble breathing and swelling of the throat and loss of your airway. These aren't things that we could have missed, 20 or 30 years ago. They would have definitely prompted medical attention. We were aware of allergic reactions for other things like antibiotics and things like that historically. So it truly actually has risen. There are cartoons of people, older people saying, oh, you have a food allergy. I don't even believe that. We never had these before. So that's true, right? And our hope is that one day we'll have a cartoon that said we used to have food allergies and now we don't. And so, we'll see. But yes, no, they actually have risen. It's not lack of diagnosis historically.
Well, let's get into that then, because these guidelines back in 2000, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended delaying peanuts until age 3. And then there were a number of sort of changes and reassessments in the following 2 decades, culminating in 2017, I think it was, that the National Institutes for Allergy and Infectious Diseases published these prevention of peanut allergy guidelines that said, no, actually, we should be introducing kids to peanuts. So what changed in our understanding?
Yeah, so I think as this peanut allergy epidemic first initially started, the 2 to 3 decades ago, I think the initial reaction of the medical community was maybe children's immune systems are so young, and if they are just not exposed to peanuts at a young age, they won't mislabel the foods as allergens. And if we wait a little bit longer to allow them to develop immune systems that are very well trained, then when they're exposed to peanuts, they won't develop food allergic reactions. And I think there was some, there wasn't randomized controlled trials saying that this was true, but there were some theories and some, studies looking at children who were fed certain types of formulas or hypoallergenic formulas and how that helped them. And so that's kind of where that theory came from. In 2008, there's an epidemic happening. Kids are progressing with peanut allergy. So I think they wanted to protect young infants from developing these allergies. And so it seemed like the right course of action. But then in 2008, there was a lot of people who started looking at the evidence and just not finding the studies to support that recommendation. So they actually retracted that and said, there's no evidence to support delaying foods. The problem was that the initial message of delaying foods was so strong that when the follow-up article and the follow-up guidelines came and said, actually, there's really no evidence to do this. We don't really know what's the right thing to do. People kind of kept up with the old practice of just telling people to delay peanuts because it just made sense, right? This is causing allergy, delay. And so when the study, the LEAP study primarily came out, that was a study that was done in England, and it had incredibly robust findings. So randomized clinical trial, very well powered, showed slightly above an 85% reduction in peanut allergy development if children were exposed to peanuts in infancy, as opposed to those who avoided them in their first 5 years of life. So really, really profound. And I should be clarified, though, that LEAP study was only in children who had eczema of some variation. They tried to take children with at least moderate to severe eczema, but there were some kids who had maybe a little bit more mild eczema in the study. But for the most part, they were looking at those high-risk children and finding exposing them to peanuts are incredibly effective. And it was actually the inverse of what we initially thought about the infant immune system. The infant immune system is untrained in that first year. And to train it, you want to expose children to the foods that they should recognize as foods, as opposed to waiting for that immune system to become fully developed and more trained later on, because at that point, the child has probably been sensitized already through other pathways in the body, like through the skin, and then it's too late to retrain the immune system. So I shouldn't say it's too late to retrain it. It's too late to prevent the peanut allergy. So that was actually that's what we're seeing now. That's this reversal. And there are a few times in medicine, very few times in medicine, I've ever seen a reversal in, the 20 plus years that I've been practicing, the way we've seen this reversal. But we feel very strongly that the original recommendations didn't have the strong evidence base. And now we have, many confirmed studies showing data that, early introduction can actually prevent food allergies.
And yet, as you've said, there was this major change in the guidelines, but the awareness of that is lacking significantly. You found, according to your study with your co-authors, that just 13% of parents and caregivers in the U.S. that you surveyed say they're aware of these guidelines, although many more, although still less than half, at least believe that early exposure to peanuts did prevent allergy. Why? What do you think is behind that? And what are the policy implications of that lack of knowledge?
Yeah, so I think the lack of knowledge, we're still about 5 years past the guidelines. And while that seems like a lot, we know historically that when guidelines are put out there, it does take sometimes almost a decade for them to be fully adopted. We know that early adopters tend to be those who are very strongly linked to the, this was an academic, paper that came out by like governing bodies. So those institutions and those practitioners who are very strongly linked to those organizations are going to be the first ones to be exposed to that information. And so, I think people who have access to that type of care are the ones that are going to know more about it. And then, of course, those who have a interest in this type of information are going to be more about it. So if you have a food allergy, you are naturally going to seek out and receive information regarding food allergies, or if you have eczema, versus if you don't. And I think a lot of what our study finds is just kind of the way information trickles out in the U.S. system, with massive barriers to access to care, and with, very clear signs of systemic racism in the way things are disseminated. And so one of the things we say in our paper is that we really need to, one, educate all pediatricians, not just academic pediatricians, right? Like everyone needs to be able to be, have access to this information, and not just the access. You know, pediatricians do a lot in that 4 and 6 month visit. They have to address sleep and development and all these other kind of questions, nutrition being one of them, but just general nutrition, not just peanut allergy prevention. And so making workflows and making tools that will actually help pediatricians implement this and not just leave it to the resources of each clinic to do so is going to be critical. But also just thinking outside that box, there's no reason why this can't be disseminated in daycare centers. There's no reason why this can't be disseminated through, you know, nutritional programs like WIC. We have to, or community centers and other things. So we have to kind of think about where people go to seek help or seek guidance for their children, and then to share information in a very accessible way along those lines.
What does this actually look like in practice? It's been, I must say, 7 years since I was responsible for feeding an infant last. How do you actually introduce peanuts? Is it peanut butter? Is it, you know, in the shell? That seems a little excessive for a child that's still developing teeth.
So what we promote is infant-safe peanut products. So peanut butter is fine. Peanut butter can be a little sticky and can be a little bit of a choking hazard. So peanut butter we find to be the most accessible. You can find it on most in any grocery store. And so thinning out peanut butter either with a little bit of water or putting it in a puree is probably the best way. There's also peanut powders. There's a lot of those on the market for people who want a little bit more concentrated way of mixing peanut into their child's diet. You can just take a peanut and crush it, you know, to a powder yourself. There's no reason why you have to buy a commercial product. You know, that might be an accessible forms. And now there's lots of baby foods that come with peanut and, you know, mixed into them, and peanut puffs that some people like to do. You know, baby-led weaning is a big thing. So some people are not doing pureed foods anymore. So there's definitely different options. But we find that peanut butter is probably the easiest way because it's just so accessible and it can be thinned out relatively easily.
You know, I'm sure you hear this as a pediatrician, but one of the common tropes of parenting is that, you know, this kind of guidance, it's always changing. How can we trust what you're saying now? How do you respond to that?
I think that's totally valid. And I mean, I'm a mom too, and you're kind of like, And I think that's where we really need to do a fantastic job of educating. And I think that's one of the things that the survey showed us, was that there's multiple points in this process where we need education. So from the beginning, we need to just be really honest about the studies that support this and kind of this really beautiful window you have in terms of like training this immune system and preventing these food allergies. I would say, you know, you could just say, oh, I don't know, I don't believe you. But the alternative is that you miss the window and then you have, you know, potentially have a higher risk of developing food allergy at a late, you know, developing a food allergy or a peanut allergy. I think there's so many benefits that we're realizing come along with early peanut introductions, peanuts themselves, nuts, and a lot of the potential allergens are actually wonderful sources of nutrition for babies. So let's say early peanut introduction doesn't work at all. There's truly no harm in introducing peanut products early. They're actually a wonderful source of protein and readily accessible. I think that can be said for many of the potential allergens as well. I think the other thing that we're realizing is that diet diversity and just exposing children to so many different foods in that first year of life is also critical and really important. And these are emerging themes. They do not have the same evidence as, you know, introducing peanut products specifically, but they're definitely, you know, to avoid, to have a better gut flora, to have, you know, to avoid picky eating syndrome and toddlers and things like that. These are things that have become very real world challenges for parents these days. So there's a lot more to early peanut introduction than just the preventing peanut allergy piece. So to kind of summarize, I would say there's no harm in doing this, and there are many benefits outside of preventing peanut allergy. But there could be tremendous harm in not doing this and waiting outside this window. You know, that coupled with just really doing good education about the evidence that we now have, I would hope would help us partner with parents to do this.
Dr. Wahida Samadi is Associate Professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Northwestern Medicine. Dr. Samadi, thank you for your time. Thanks for being with us today on the 21st Show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us. Thank you for your interest.
And that's all the time we have for the show today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.